Welcome to Saints History, told and experienced the way God intended it, with excessive amounts of alcohol and cursing. The booze is probably bourbon because...
Other alcohols are for rich women on diets.
Now, here's your drunk Saints History host, who is...
bombed out of his gourd.
All right, welcome to Saints Drunk History. It's the last one of the year. It's December. We're doing... the 1983 Saints, we're doing part two with my boy, Mike Mills. Booking the territory, go there. It's the best wrestling podcast. It's old school. It's like TV. It's like, Mike, quickly explain it to the people what you do, because you can do it better than I will.
It's Saturday night on TBS from the 80s.
Yes.
You know, the old Channel 17, if you had cable, Cox Cable back in the day, if you were in New Orleans or wherever you were, if you had Channel 17 TBS. It's NWA Saturday night on TBS. All the great promos were Ric Flair and the Horsemen. Just a wild time. Myself, my two co-hosts, Hardbody Harper, Doc Turner. We're just three dudes sitting at a bar, literally drinking and talking about what we watched in wrestling that week and having a good time and cursing and making terrible jokes. They call us the Unprofessional Wrestling Podcast because it is very unprofessional. So you have been warned when you come and listen.
Hey, it might be unprofessional, but if you search wrestling podcasts on iTunes, it's in the fucking top 25. That's all I know. So
that sure is.
It is. So the Saints at this point in 1983, they are 5-3. New Orleans is fucking giddy. And you look around and people are feeling good about it. So they start the second half of the year. They go to Buffalo and it's just another one-score game. But this was a game Saints got to put them on. They got to put on them, you know, because this Buffalo team was they were only 8-8, but they were a team, Mike, in the early 80s. They didn't win any playoff games or go deep, but they were good, you know, like. This was before they got bad in the mid-80s, you know?
Yeah, they were a solid team at this point. They weren't great. They were average. I say solid. I should say average. But, you know, the Saints are up there. They're playing in cold weather. They're you know, it's like in the 30s during this game. They're a dome team, although back then Nobody talked about shit like that. But they were away from home, and they got to put on them. Yeah, they did. I mean, it ends up being a six-point game, but they were down 20, you know, in the first half.
They were down 20 to nothing, you know, at 20 to 7 at the half. John Tice caught a touchdown, Hobie Brenner, Ty Young. Kenny Stabler got dinged in this game or pulled, and because – Baum was just not – he just was yanking them back and forth, man, at this point. And Dave Wilson went 19 of 31. Dave Wilson at this point, the Saints had spent a number one pick on him, and he wasn't quite locked in as the backup quarterback that we knew him in the late 80s. He was still kind of like, he might be the guy. And he threw the ball all over. Granted, it was all catch-up yards. But it was 27-21. Saints turned the ball over three times. Buffalo didn't. That's it, you know. The thing in this game, man, George Rogers is still rolling. Like, 21 for 114. Like, George Rogers, before he got messed up in drugs and stuff, he was fucking good, Mike. You know? He's like
he was a truck.
You know,
he was a truck. I mean, he was a truck. You know, it's funny. You talk about George Rogers. So I interviewed one of his teammates from South Carolina on my show years ago. Del Wilkes. Yeah. He was the Patriot. He was pro wrestling. But we were talking about George Rogers. He's like, man, George had some demons, but he was one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. He was a lineman. He played with George Rogers. He was on the same team as him. So anyway, Rogers was just a damn good running back. There's no other way to say it. I mean, he was a hell of a draft pick. He was just a damn good running back. He had 21 carries, 114 yards. His long was only 18. So, I mean, it wasn't like he ripped a super long one off to get to 114. So, he had a decent game. The Saints, what killed him in that game, you said it was the turnovers.
Yeah. So, they're 5-4. The thing about the Saints, the 83 team, I mean, they just – man, they had a lot of heartache, but they just, like, kept grinding it, you know? You know, so they the next week, they come home and they play Atlanta. You know, the Saints are 5-4. Atlanta's 4-5. So this is one of one of those things in wrestling that you like, Mike. This is kind of like a loser leaves town match, you know? Because if the Saints get to 6-4, they're really in the playoff hunt, and if Atlanta can get to 5-5, then they're kind of done. So this is like a loser leaves town match, kind of, right?
Yeah, just about, because I mean, you're pretty much at this stage of the game getting to where it's ride or die. And the thing was, remember, this is the time when you only had the three divisions that went to the playoffs in one wild card. So you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. But so when Atlanta loses here, you don't have that extra spot we now have that's floating around, if that makes sense. So
yeah, you didn't have the six, so yeah. You really had to get it. So this was in the dome, and the Saints, they fall behind 10-0, but they come on like gamebusters. Wayne Wilson, 7-yard touchdown, 5-yard touchdown. Hoki Gajon, Tyrone Young. This Dave Wilson's playing because Stabler's banged up. Hoki Gajon, 11-yard rush. So the Saints win 27-10, and you know, it was just a good home win against a team that's kind of similar to you. Let's give it up for Hoki Gajon, 8-43, 2 touchdowns, and he caught 2 for 31. Like, before Gajon blew out his knee, he was really, really good fullback. Like, Hoki Gajon nowadays would kill it. Because he could catch, he was really like Sean Payton, Hoki Gajon would play fullback and catch 45 balls and probably be the Pro Bowl fullback. Like, and I'm not just saying that because we loved Hoki. Like, Hoki was really good before he wrecked his knee.
And that was back to Ralph when teams used fullbacks a lot differently than they obviously do now. But in a Sean Payton offense, he'd find ways to use Hoki. But Hoki was a bruiser, man. He stuck his nose in there and he got those tough yards, man. Hell of a fullback.
Defense forced 3 turnovers, 5 sacks. I mean, this defense, and it was Bum, and it was a young and thin Wade Phillips who would wear a jacket on the sideline with patches. Like, it was just like, you know, like, and Wade Phillips, like, you can knock him as a head coach. That dude knows defense, and he knew it. He knows it now. He knew it in 1983. Like, you know. Like, this defense,
he was always a good defensive coordinator. Head coach, defense, make him a coordinator.
Yeah. So if they're 6-4, and they go out there, you know, they're 6-4, and San Francisco's 6-4. So this is like a battle for first, which for the Saints to be battling for first, and it's the middle of November. This is like heaven on earth for Saints fans. We cannot stress this enough, that this is like huge thing. So, you know, it was the CBS game of the week. It was a huge deal. It was out at Candlestick. And Mike, tell the people what happened.
Oh, the Saints got dump trucked. They got. Let me say this: each team had 3 turnovers apiece, but the Saints had 129 yards of total offense. San Fran had 397.
How many times did Dave Wilson get sacked?
Dave Wilson got sacked 9 freaking times.
No wonder that dude was always hurt. He was broken in half.
That's about a half a season's worth of Saints sacks right now.
I mean, Jesus. He got sacked 9 times. I found this game on like a weird movie website. I'm not going to put the link because it probably has virused up my computer in ways that are horribly. I probably would have been better off like watching animal porn than where I found this game. But dude, Dave Wilson took, I mean, he got sacked 9 times, but he took a fucking, he threw 29 times. He probably got hit on 25. He got his ass beat down.
Go back to what we said in part 1. Back then, quarterbacks got powerbombed. They got suplexed. Yep. They got the Randy Savage elbow dropped off him off the top rope. There was no easy sacks back then. So if he got actually physically sacked nine times, he got beat to shit nine times.
Yes.
And like you said, he threw 29 passes. I'm going to bet on about 15 of those 29 of the ones he didn't get sacked, he got blasted as he went down.
Funny thing, weird stat about this game is the Saints got shut out, but they wouldn't get shut out again until 1997.
No, it's not right, Ralph.
What's
that? They got shut out 3 weeks later.
Well, no, they. You're right. I'm thinking. Why am I thinking that? But they. This. That's what I meant. I had my. That's how you know I'm drinking a lot, Mike. I have my little card that I made today.
Like, wait.
And I had my statistic. I'll save it then. I'll save the shut. I'll save my shutout statistic. I'm drinking too much. Bud Light is getting to me on a Friday. So the Saints are 6-5. And then they host the Jets on Monday night. Mike, people can see this on the YouTubes.
Yeah.
But should we tell them to? Because it's kind of horrible.
I mean, look, dude, this was 35 years ago, and I don't know if I want. I'm not trying to relive this shit.
I mean, it's bad. The Saints, a Monday night game at home. Which Monday Night Football, now it's sort of watered down because they have Monday Night Football and Sunday Night and Thursday Night. Like, Monday Night Football in the 80s, dude, it was fucking it. When you looked at the schedule,
oh, yeah.
Like, we're on Monday Night Football, it was like fucking yes. Like,
so let's, Yeah, let me stop you because people need to understand this. Right now, you got Sunday Night, you got Thursday Night, you got Monday Night. And even with the Sunday Night, even though every team plays eventually on Thursday night the way they got to sit up, on Sunday night, there's also flex scheduling. So you may not have a Sunday night game at the beginning of the year that you get flexed into. Well, back then, all you had was one game a week ever for primetime, Monday night. So like when the schedule came out every year, I don't know if you were like me, but I would always look to go, ooh, are the Saints on Monday Night Football? Because they never were on Monday Night Football. Ralph, they literally, we're talking about this right now, but it was like a rarity for them to be on Monday Night Football because they fucking sucked. I mean, to be frank.
The thing is, they didn't have the rules back then where, like, every team had to be on a primetime game and the NFL tried to even them out and, like, shove a bad game in there every once in a while. Like, ABC was like, we want the best fucking games. And they would pick, you know, they had clunkers because you could never tell. But I mean, they put the Saints and the Jets on, and it's a Monday night game, and the Saints come out, and middle of the third quarter, George Rogers scores, and they're up 28-14 on the Jets. And you're like, hey, they're going to hold it down. Richard Todd was the Jet quarterback who, oh, by the way, would eventually be a Saint quarterback. Ken Stabler was back. He was 12-19. He had a touchdown and a pick. He got sacked twice. But the Saints just, like, bum did his, like, bum Phillips type activities. Or, like, he didn't want to throw the ball, which he probably had, like, the Dallas game scarred into his brain. You know, and he's like, I don't want to throw, but like the Saints like had like multiple possessions where they just like couldn't get a first down to like run clock, you know.
This was pathetic. Up 28-14, and then the fourth quarter happens.
Yeah,
just
the Jets hit a pass to make it 28-24, and then with like a minute and something to go, the Saints punt. And dude for the Jets, Springs, his name literally is Springs. He goes 76 yards for a punt return. But if you watch the game, and I hate myself, so I watched this game. Dude, he almost busted a bunch of them. Like, you could, it's, you know, sometimes you can see those games that are like coming, right? You're like, oh my God, the special teams, this is going to be a fucking disaster. And like, you could see it all game long. Like, it was just a matter of like when the bad punt return was going to happen.
And it finally happened. Now, let me remind you something, Ralph. So remember, let's go back to game 2 against the Rams. Game two against the Rams, they lose it by three late. Game four against Dallas, they blow a one-point lead on a safety. Game number 12 against Jets, they lose by three on a punt return. Now, they've blown three games at this point. All they needed was one more win for the playoffs, but they've blown three. So they're starting to stack up.
Yeah, and these aren't like coin flip games. These were games where the Saints had 10-point leads. Except for the Dallas game. But the Dallas game, if they don't have the field goal block, they'd have been up 10, you know? So, like, these are, like, heartbreaking losses. But, again, the Saints, you're like, oh, they're 6-6. They'll just roll over and die. That's what the Saints do. But on a short week, they're in the dome. They play Minnesota, who, oh, by the way, was 6-6 too. Another loser leaves town match. And the Saints fight their ass off. And, you know, in the fourth quarter, they go up. Wayne Wilson scores, and it's 17-13. Vikings kick a field goal, but the Saints held the Minnesota. You can go to YouTube. You can watch this game. You know, the Saints, they held on, Mike. They held on 17-16. I mean, if you this game is like a time capsule 1983 game. Like, if you were going to watch this game, you're going to be like, oh, my God, look at this offense. I can't. What, they're not running motion. What are they doing, you know?
It's painful. It's pain. I mean, and the thing about it was the Saints had five turnovers. They turned the ball over five times, and they still won.
And they won. They were a fucking
train wreck.
Dude, they
took five times, and they won a game. Freaking Ken Stabler, 13-22 for 171 yards, three interceptions.
He's cooked. He got hurt. He's cooked. At this point, he is fucking cooked.
When you watch him. Like, we're joking about this, but when you watch him in some of these games and, like, the way he's kind of scrambling, he literally almost looks like my drunk uncle out there trying to play, like, football on Thanksgiving Turkey Bowl. That's why he looks, dude. He looks like he's just had a 12-pack, and he's out there trying to – because he just looks beat the hell, man.
Yeah, and he's – I mean, like, they're awful, but, you know, they had five turnovers, but they win, and they're 7-6. And then a game that I could not find on the YouTubes, but I desperately, desperately, desperately wanted to find this game. I want to find this game, Mike, and I want to have, like, a watch party where, like, our patrons can – we can rent out a theater, and we can watch this game because it's so – the box score of it is so fucking terrible. I want to see it. It's like it's like a horror film of offense. Tell the people what this is when they went to New England on December 4th.
Okay, so the thing about this year that sticks in my mind more than anything, I specifically remember watching this game against New England and the next game against Philly because they were away games. And I did not watch the last one, but I heard it on the radio. But with the New England game, I remember this. I remember being at home. I remember watching it at noon, December 4th. Literally, when the game comes on, I couldn't find the video, like you said, but I remember the snow coming down. I remember there being a snow-covered field in New England. New England at that year, at that point, was 7 wins also. So it's like, all right, you think it's evenly
– 6-7, Saints were 7-6, yeah.
6-7. That's right. They end up being 7-7 after the game. So you're like, all right, well, maybe they got a chance. You know, I mean, it's evenly matched team. Let's see what happens. And I just remember it being like the worst game to watch from a spectator point of view ever. It literally was just freaking. It was just hard to watch, man. I think the New England team punted five times, and the Saints punted five times as well.
Here's the best part. New England ran back a kickoff. I have this box score.
That's right.
New England ran the opening kickoff back. 83 yards. They ended it on a 3-yard drive, or 90 whatever yards. Tony Collins scored a 3-yard touchdown in the first quarter after the opening kickoff. It was 7-0. There would be no more scoring in this game.
Yep.
The entire way.
It's boring game ever. Imagine if that happened in 2018.
New England. They completed.
This is New England before Tom Brady days.
New England completed 3 fucking passes in the game. They had 30 yards. They completed one of the passes on the first drive. They completed 2 passes the rest of the game. Fucking 3 of 10 for 30 yards. That was Tony Eason. He got sacked twice. His rating was 39.6, and they won the game. The Saints had 280 yards of offense, but turned the ball over 3 times. I mean, like, they ran the ball 34 times. You know, the Saints, like, they moved the ball. They just, they kept gagging it up. And, you know, to in a bad weather game, to run for 161 yards, although New England ran for 191. Like, this game was so, it's so, fuck, it was so boring.
I watched it. It was terrible. It was hard to watch. Because, the other part of it, too, is, again, they're in playoff contention, and you're watching them go up here, and you're like, this is going to be a cold weather game. And this is when I was a kid, started to think to myself, oh, man, they're going to go play in cold weather. Like, I started thinking of that. In my mind, I finally was like, oh, here comes the cold weather. And if you look the box score up in the game info about this, it'll tell you it was 34 degrees and the wind was 20 miles an hour, but there was a wind chill of 22. I know it's saying 34 degrees, but I distinctly remember when this game came on TV, there was snow on the ground in New England. And this is back when they played on that old hard-ass AstroTurf, too. Oh, so it was like a goddamn skating rink out there for these guys. On that damn old AstroTurf. So this game was just terrible. The over-under was 35.5. They never got close to that crap. 7-0, most boring. This is probably, you know, we talk about boring games and terrible games to watch. The more I think about it, this was the worst football game I've ever watched in my life.
Yeah, so the Saints, at this point, they're 7-7, but they're hanging on and – I distinctly remember the newscast. They're like, they're behind San Francisco, but they, you know, what are you getting at the end of the year? You do all the tiebreaker for them. And I remember, I think it was Jim Henderson. He's like, they control their own destiny. They win the last two, and they're in. And you're like, yes, they're going to go to the crappy weather of Philadelphia, but Philadelphia's terrible and they get the Rams at home. Like they can do this, we think. So
let me remind you, I specifically remember right before this game on the NFL Today on CBS, because back then the NFC was on CBS. A lot of people might not realize that. I remember either on that show or somewhere else during the week saying, hey, look, they can, like you said, they control their own destiny. All they got to do is win the next two, and they're in. And like you said, they go to Philly, and Philly's not a good team. They've only got 5 wins at this point, 5-9. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. So, you know, the Saints, they go to Philly, and they win. They win 20-17. And the thing is, though, dude, this is like Morton Anderson. 50-yard field goal in overtime, in the fucking cold, with 10-mile-an-hour wind, 75% humidity, wind chill 31. He fucking bangs home a 50-yard field goal on that shitty veteran stadium turf that literally would end dudes' careers.
Yes, that was a shitty field. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that was a shitty field, dude. They didn't gain a lot of yards either. They only had 283 total yards in that game.
Yeah. But, you know.
I remember this. I remember this game well. I was at my dad's house watching this game, and I remember when Morton made the field goal, And my dad was like, all right, we got the Rams at home next week, man. They can do this. They can do this.
I've got the Wayne Mack Who Dat History book, and I love this quote. In Philadelphia, Morton Anderson kicked a 50-yard field goal in the swirling wind with 9:30 remaining in overtime to win the game. The Saints had a snapper. I'll butcher his name, Mike, because that's what I do. Jim Pizzerak is the best snapper in the league. Sent a perfect spiral to Guido Merkins, who was the Saints holder. You know what he told Morton right before the kick? He said, make the damn thing. I'm cold. And Morton bangs it through, and the Saints are 8-7, and it's like 8-7. Rams are 8-7. It's December 18th. It's 1 o'clock. Winner gets in the playoffs. It's the biggest game in fucking Saints history. And this is back when the touchdown club was like a big thing for the Saints. And the Saints coach would like go to the touchdown club like every week. You know, and yeah, they'd have the luncheon. And it was like, it's not a big deal now. Because back then, I guess coaches didn't make as much money. So the touchdown club would give the coach a couple bucks. And, you know, the coaches had their own TV shows, right? It was a big deal. Because, the coaches and players didn't make as much. So you wanted an outside income. Now, Sean Payton makes $9 million. He's not doing a fucking radio show. He's not going to the touchdown club for $1,500 on a Tuesday, right?
Yeah, even remember when Mora had his own show, once he came in, there was a Jim Mora show. It used to come on before like Monday Night Football. Like, you know, back then those coaches were trying to make, you know, additional income. Even Mora back then, but you're right, man. Sean Payton ain't fucking doing nothing, man. He's making $9 million a year. What the fuck's he gonna do some shit like
so,
that for?
So bums at the award ceremony for the touchdown club at the end of the year. He's like telling the people, he's like, we're gonna kick some ass this week. Like, it's just great. I know football's better and all that, but and the Sunday ticket and all, but man, 80s football, like people like bum was just great. And that's why like I love Sean Payton, because he still does a little of that. Like, I love the teams that talk the shit and just, you know, they do their thing, Mike, and I love
Sean,
it.
Dude, like, people don't realize it, too. I think you've said this a bunch of times on the show. Sean Payton's an asshole. He's a douchebag, but he's our, you know. He's our
douchebag, baby.
Yeah, he's our douchebag. So we like his humor and the way he kind of, you know, acts stupid and the way he does certain things. We love it because we love when he sticks it to the other team. But, you know, being honest, man, that's Sean Payton. But it's all good. It's entertaining. So I'm good with it. But it was a different time. 80s football was totally different. We got it good now, but man, you know, because we don't have to listen on the radio no more. But 80s football had some stuff to it, man. It was grit. You see, I didn't talk about this whole time. You ever, Ralph, when you were watching these games played in the Superdome, do you see these guys playing on that hard AstroTurf? They got the freaking elbow pads from the middle of their up to their shoulder because they're protecting themselves against that hard turf. They actually literally wore pads in their pants back then because they were getting so beat to shit on those ridiculously hard fields. I mean, just a time, man.
The wide receivers, most of them would wear these big hip pads that would pop out the side of the uniform.
They had to, or they freaking break a hip.
Because you needed it because it was so hard. I remember when I was a kid and I went to the dome, and I got to run around on the field, and I was like, oh my God, this is like awful. Like, you see it on TV and you don't realize. And I was like 10, 11. I was like, this is fucking terrible. I cannot imagine doing this 16 weeks a year. Like, people don't realize, like, football in the 80s is like, it was like, kill the quarterback, like, take a shot of the pain. The stadiums were shitty. Like, it was not, I mean, it's still physical and not as glamorous. But, man, them 80s football players put up with a lot.
Dude, that freaking turf was ridiculous. I didn't mean to get a sidetrack. I know we gotta talk about the debacle.
That's what people
the Rams
want. They
here,
want the side. They want the sidetracks. So,
dude, that was just
stupid. Like, whoever thought AstroTurf was a good idea? I mean, we want to talk about all these head injuries that football players got in the 80s. Yeah, they did some reckless shit hitting each other. Man, I want to know what percentage of that was from banging their heads against that goddamn turf.
Yeah.
But anyway,
So this game, man, the Saints going in, it's 70,000, just like the if you can find it on the YouTube, they used to have the second half, like the you can just, even the old crappy TV quality, like you can just feel it coming through on the YouTube when I would watch it, and it's just the crowd is just fucking bananas, right? Because it's a playoff game, basically, right?
It was nuts.
And the Saints come out, and this is a game, like, Baum is, like, alternating back and forth between Ken Stabler and Dave Wilson.
Jesus Christ.
But, you know, he hit Jeff – Ken Stabler hits Jeff Groth. I found a radio clip. Larry Mattson was the play-by-play guy for the Saints back then. Well, and the Saints went on a great first drive to start. They're up 7-0, and they got all the momentum. Stabler gets fucking sacked in the end zone. And the Saints are up 7-2, but I cannot express enough. Like, this crowd is fucking bananas. And the Saints defense, led by Ricky Jackson, is just fucking killing the Rams. Like, they only sacked Ferragamo 2 times, but they were shutting them down. Like, the Rams were only 15-31 for 175. And the Saints are just, like, in complete control. But then Henry Ellard, he might be a Saints killer Hall of Famer, Mike, for old school Saints fans.
Yeah, he was. It was him first, and then Flipper Anderson later on. Yeah. But Henry Ellard was a beast against the Saints. He would, and this game was, God, this game, he starts it off with the punt return.
He sets it up with the punt return. They're up 9-7. Third quarter, Saints throw a pick, and it's returned for a touchdown. Johnny Johnson, Mike Lansford kick, 16-7. That's the Kenny Stabler. Dave Wilson comes in, leads a drive. He gets a 1-yard rush. It's 16-14 Rams. Then in the fourth quarter, Morton Anderson kicks a field goal at 17-16. And the Saints, they're just fucking dominating the Rams. Like, the Rams are not doing shit. They're getting first down here every now and then. But the Rams, I mean, they only had a fucking 238 yards of offense and 78 yards rushing, which for the Rams back then with Eric Dickerson, to hold him to 19 rushes for 80 yards, like, you said that before the game, Bowman would be like, we're going to the playoffs, baby. Like, you know? Like, that's how you stopped the Rams back then.
Let me say this before you say what happens to the Rams, with the exception of extra points and a field goal, did not score on offense.
They did not.
But Ralph, how many touchdowns did they score in the game? Now, keep in mind, they didn't score one touchdown on offense. How many touchdowns did they score in a
game?
They
scored 3 because they have another one coming. Nolan Cromwell intercepted. One interception from Stabler, one interception from Wilson. They each got one return for a touchdown. Cromwell, not the famous dude from England, Oliver, Nolan, he returns it 43 yards. Mike Lansford kicked 23-17. But the Saints, they fight back. They fumble going in, but Steve Court recovers it. It's 24-23. Now, Mike, did you manage to find this game on video?
No, but I remember listening to this shit as a kid on the radio, and yeah. I was like, oh, they're gonna go to the playoffs. They're gonna go to the playoffs, and my mom was right there. She's like, they're gonna go to the playoffs, and fuck.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. They're at the end of the game. They got the ball. And they got the ball at the Ram 37. And it's 4th-and-1.
Mm-hmm.
And you're Bum Phillips. What do you do? It's 4th-and-1. You can trot Morton Anderson out and have him kick a 50-plus yard field goal, right?
Right.
And that'll put you up a score. And the Rams ain't scored all fucking day. They've literally not scored up to this point, They have 23 points. They have not scored a fucking single point on offense. Right, Mike? Mm-hmm. So you're Bum Phillips. Yep. You got 4th and 1. You kick the field goal more than anything. But if you miss the field goal, they're going to get the ball at the 40-yard line. They can hit a couple of plays on you. You kick the field goal, right? You could go for it with George Rogers and be like, hey, George, you've carried it 32 times for 124 yards today. Can you get me 2 more yards or maybe even just a yard? And we'll wrap this thing up. But Bum is like, nah, I'm going to trust my defense, who's basically pitching a shutout. I'm going to punt the ball. The problem was that for the Saints, Erksleben had gotten hurt. And so Guido Merkins was out there to punt. And he punted it, and it was a touchback. So Rams got the ball at the 20. So it ended up being like a 17-yard punt. But my question to you is, you're Bum Phillips in that situation. What would you have done?
So you got, at that point, you got George Rogers, who he ended up with 124 yards in that game, and you gave the ball to him 32 times. I probably wouldn't trot Morton out there, only because you got to, even though Morton's generally automatic, only because you back that up 7 yards. That's a 54-yard field goal he's trying to kick. If he misses, you're giving them really, really good field position. I probably would just go for it. I'd take my chances going for it. I don't know if I'd punt. Now, if I got my current punter, maybe I do punt, because I feel like Morstead could put that sumbitch on the 3-yard line with ease. So let me say that. If I got Morstead back there, I'm like, who the fuck? See, Erksleben's hurt, so I don't know if you can punt it, man. You got to go. I think you got to go for it.
To me,
you
that's...
You either got to go for it or trot Morton out there, and I'm going to say go for it. And the reason being is because...
Dude, the thing is, if you're Bum, you got to go for it. And you got to say, George Rogers is my best player on offense. I have the ball. If I cannot get a fucking yard, so be it. I'll trot my defense back out there that's stoned them all day. I've given up 20 yards of field position, maybe. But if you got a chance to win the game, go win the game. And I just I hated that call. And the thing was, they punted it. It's out of the end zone, so it's 20-yard line. And here's the thing, man. The Rams started out slow. They sacked fucking Vergamo on the drive. And they had a 4th. And again, it's the 80s, so you don't have the down. You don't have the little score bug with the down and the distance, and the announcers never tell you. They had a 4th, and I want to say, by my math, Mike, it was about a 4th and 24.
Jesus Christ.
And they hit it. And it was Preston Dennard who hit it. And he caught it, and it was 26 yards. And it got him close. And then Mike Lansford, you know, because the Saints were kind of shook at that point, and they drove down. And Mike Lansford, who without a doubt is the kicker on the Saints Killers Hall of Fame team. Like, he is the kicker. There is no fucking doubt. I don't want to hear from you millennials telling me about this kicker or that kicker. Mike Lansford is the fucking worst. That barefooted motherfucker.
Yeah. We Lansford broke our heart a few times.
Yeah. So Lansford bangs it in from 42, and the Saints lose 26-24. And, I mean, you just, like, I mean, Bum Phillips even said, like, it broke his heart, and he was never the same. Like, he desperately wanted to get the Saints over the hump and be the guy that got them to the playoffs. And he had said, you know, I felt like if I could get to the Saints to get to the playoffs, it wouldn't be like winning a Super Bowl, but it would be really close. And Wade Phillips said it broke his heart, man. And he never was the same. He coached, you know, he coached the Saints for two more years, but he never was the same, and it broke his heart. And I just got to wonder, man, he passed away, but I would love to have asked him, like, if he goes back and plays that again, like, what would he do, you know?
I would hope he goes for it. Ice the game right there.
You know?
Just because that was a tough one. They came back next year and went 7-9, but that was – you just felt something in that fucking season that they – again, they needed one win, Ralph, and we've gone over the Patriots game. Well, that was a one score game, but this game 16 against the Rams, the Jets game, they gave the Dallas game, they lose on a fucking safety. The first Rams game that they were up, they lose by three. They literally had four games that if just one of those games would have swayed the other way and they go 9-7, they're in the playoffs for the first time. Just
and
think
the
about
thing
that.
Is like the Dallas game and the Jet game were inexcusable to lose. Like you cannot lose those games. And the shame of it was the Dallas game, you know, they played great. I mean, Dallas, Miami, those were teams that won the division. The only teams that put it to them were Buffalo. San Francisco put it to him twice. One of those games was just a turnover, a fest, you know. But the rest of the time, man, the Saints, they were in these games, and they had 30 guys on the team that were 3 years or less. Like Bum had built it. The thing that I'll never understand is why he didn't go get a quarterback in 83 and why he felt like Archie wasn't the guy. And I'd have understood if he'd have been like, in 83, he'd have been like, look, I drafted Marino or I drafted even Eason or Ken O'Brien, and I'm like, Archie's old, so he's not the guy anymore. We're going out. But you pushed out Archie and you brought in fucking 900-year-old Ken Stabler. Like,
I remember like that, not just that, but like, and then you got 84 where you got Richard Todd in there too, and Dave. Well, you're right. Like, it's just like, so you went and got Stabler, and now here we are the next year. You know, when they got to 7-9 the next season, it with Richard Todd and freaking Dave Wilson.
Yeah.
And Stabler too. And Stabler was on that team. But my point is, freaking Richard Todd started 14 games for the Saints the very next season. So it's like, you're right. Why didn't they go get a quarterback?
Yeah, and he traded away the 85 first round pick for Earl Campbell. Like, it just like
that was just dumb. Oh
yeah,
my
like
God.
He just burned through draft pick. Like in 83, like Bruce Clark was a decent player, but to me, like they needed. But the thing is, in the 80s, man, and Mike Dettillier talked about this when I did a feature on Bobby Hebert, the holdout season in 1990. Like teams in the 80s, and even into the early 90s, like they didn't view the quarterback as the be-all, end-all. Teams looked at it as like, I can build my team, and I can build this awesome team, and then I can plug in a quarterback who won't fuck it up, and it'll be fine. Because, you know, we talked about it in part one, like the passing rules had just changed in the late 70s, and teams just didn't view it that way. But my God, if you just give Bum Phillips a halfway decent quarterback, they probably are a 9-10 win team, you know. And if
it was different. It was different at that time. Everybody doesn't understand me. This era that we're in with the whole quote unquote franchise quarterback, that term wasn't thrown around like it is now. Back then, you literally had teams that would like you said, they would build whole teams, and if you had a quarterback that could just maintain it and not just screw it up, then okay, great. But this we're just in a different era with the whole franchise quarterback thing, where now you gotta have it, or it's like, why are you even playing?
Yeah, I mean, but back then, I mean, the Saints just needed a decent, and also Bum was getting past his philosophy on offense. It just didn't go anymore, you know.
Dude, I will never forget. He traded for freaking not George Rogers, freaking Earl Campbell, and I will never forget Earl Campbell breaking out into the open and then just running out of gas at the 10-yard line or wherever it was.
I mean,
just
he was just loyal to his Oiler guys. They made a joke. It was like Oilers Drive instead of Airline Drive, and it was Oilers East. I mean, and the shame of it was, like, Bum wasn't bad at drafting in the USFL when it folded. When he did the draft for the Saints, he picked Mel Gray, who was a fucking fantastic return guy for the Saints. He picked Vaughn Johnson. He picked not Steve Court. There was another guy that the Saints had at center. I'm drawing a blank. They picked him. Like, he picked three or four dudes from the USFL that were really good. Like, Bum was good at picking players. His problem was he liked to trade away high pick for washed-up dudes. And Bum also had a theory of, like, he didn't like the late-round picks. So that was back when the draft was, like, 12, 14 rounds. So right. Bum would package, like, his 8, 9, 10, 11, 12th-round pick for, like, a fifth. You know? So if you look at the Saints draft, like, a lot of times they don't have anybody after the 8th round, because Bum would just, like, package the last 4 rounds and get one more player, and then, like, I'm done, I'm going to the racetrack.
He did.
Which is the best. Bum. So,
Bum Phillips.
This has been awesome. I think I wonder how people are gonna view this, Mike, but it's important because it's this team is the foundation of the moral winning. So it's really interesting. Me and you have enjoyed this 90 minutes. I hope the fans do. But I've enjoyed the fuck out of it. Sometimes I just need to do the drunk history for me and not for the fans. This one is for me.
This is, like, again, I want to reiterate, if you are a younger fan, and when I say younger, I mean, like, mid-90s or even 1990 and up to where we are now, and you just don't remember these years, man. Like, there are Saints fans out there who lived through a year like 83 where we talk about all these close losses, and that's how, like, whenever it gets bad for the current Saints, I'm like, well, it'll never be like that. No, maybe one day it will be, but it's hard to replicate and duplicate what happened in 1983. But it's the thing about 1983, that was the Saints back then. That's how they would mess it up. And we were just used to it.
But the thing was, it felt good. Like, you were like, well, they've never been this close before. At least they're almost in. Yeah. Like, it felt really good to be that close. Like, for the Saints to have a game where you win and you get in, like, because they, from 67 to 83, they were a trash pile, you know, most teams would be like, not that great of a year. Like, 8-8 for the Saints, it felt fucking amazing. If they go 8-8 this year, and if they went 8-8 this year and they lost the final game not to get in the playoffs, like, we'd be like, this year sucked. We thought we were going to the Super Bowl. We had the team. It didn't work out. But in 83, man, it hurt because of the way they lost. But at the end, you were like, man, we're making strides. We're like an actual NFL team now.
Yeah, it was close. I mean, that's all we wanted back then. Like, seriously, we just wanted to be close back then.
We wanted to not be an embarrassment, and that the Saints and Bum had made them not an embarrassment. So thanks, Mike, for joining us. I can't thank you enough. People, Booking the Territory, it's the best wrestling podcast. It's old school 80s wrestling. It's fucking phenomenal. Listen to it. It's awesome. It is since I am in Houston and my commuting hell, I listen to it at least once a week because my commute is terrible and I need to laugh, and it does that for me. Booking the Territory, search it on all your social media, find it. It's awesome. Mike, my friend, thanks for joining us. Hopefully when people listen to this podcast in December, the Saints will be very, very good.
God, I hope so. As we as we lead into week number 3 against Atlanta right now.
All right, Drunk. All right, British lady, take us out.
Thanks to all of our Saints Happy Hour listeners whose donations made Drunk Saints history possible. Until next time, remember, surviving Saints history is hard. That's why God made alcohol.